there's otherwise elsewhere will be due, and test week will be upon it. That is mandatory, that is the helpful time to do it. Now, as we previously indicated, we're taking successively gospel subjects, opening the door to investigation in various fields. Last week, I was unable to be here, and at that time, you began a discussion of the subject of pre-existence. I suppose you should consider what pre-existence is, and some of the general laws and conditions that appertain. Now tonight, I thought that in harmony with that and growing out of that discussion, we talk about this matter of foreordination, because foreordination can be understood only in the light of pre-existence. In some respects, it was a little unfair to the teacher that you had last week to have him just happen to come on the night where you were discussing according to my own outline some of the philosophical concepts concerning pre-existence, because frankly that particular phase of our discussions is the hardest thing that's involved. I was teaching a couple of graduate courses at the Brigham Young University this last summer in the same subjects that are here involved. These same two courses, as a matter of fact, except on a graduate level. And this matter of pre-existence and the philosophical concepts that were involved were by all odds the most difficult of any of the things that we were teaching. Now, in order to pick up the threads of last week, I not knowing fully what was said, but knowing the general concepts, perhaps we could put together, if need be, any of the conclusions and hopefully arrive at a unity of the faith. And at least, if we don't, make it very clear that certain things which are commonly said and commonly taught in the church either are not true or are in the realm of pure speculation. Now, I don't object to anybody believing anything that they want to believe where pre-existence is concerned, perhaps more than in any other field. But I think in wisdom and in justice and in equity and in fairness to oneself, people at least should know that if they believe certain things, which a lot of people do believe, and which I don't happen to, but if they do believe them, they must know that they're speculation and ought to be mentally alert enough to so label. Now, if there's some question that someone would like to bring up about last week's discussion, we'd be happy to entertain it at this time.
I just had one I asked last week about the scripture when the reference that God gave these spirits after they were formed from the whole entity their agency. And he said in the scripture that he had.
This is a true principle. Things in pre-existence start with God, our eternal Father. And God, our Father, is a personage of character, which means that he has a body of flesh and bone. A body which is tangible, a body which can be felt. Now, he lives in a family unit. And that means that gods are male and female. We don't talk in the gospel about goddesses. There's no such word in our revelations. But the word that is in our revelations is gods in the plural. And And that word is used with reference to people who gain exaltation. It talks in section 132 about people who are married according to the Lord's law and who keep the covenant, and who then go on in the resurrection as husband and wife in the family unit. And it says off there, then shall they be gods. And the they that is spoken of is a man and a woman. So gods are of two sexes. They're male and they're female. The they is defined as husband and wife. Now, pre-existence is simply this. There is God, the eternal Father. We have almost nothing to say in our teaching about the fact that he has a wife, other than the fact that we say that he lives in the family unit. Now, in that family unit, there were children born. And the children who were born were spirits. And those spirits are men and women, having bodies of a more pure and refined substance than the temporal bodies that we now have. We do sing in the song, O My Father, about the fact that there is a mother in heaven. In the heavens are parents single, no the thought makes reason stare, truth is reason, truth eternal. Tell me I a mother there. In the days of President Joseph F. Smith, the first presidency, issued a document in which they talked in plainness about a mother in heaven and about celestial parents in the plural. Well, these celestial parents are our eternal parents, and we are children. Now, in pre-existence, God ordained the laws. He created the plan of salvation so that these spirit children could advance and become like him. And they become like him if they become gods, meaning live in the family unit. Now, God did two things. He gave laws to his children. And the laws are called the plan of salvation. These laws enable people to advance or progress, are not depending upon whether they live. Now, implicit in the fact that he gave laws to people so that they could obey them is the fact that he also gave them agency. And that agency is simply the power to obey or to disobey, to conform or not to conform. So we started out in pre-existence with God's laws before us. And the mere fact that we have the law implicit in it is the fact that we could obey it or disobey it. And that obedience or disobedience constitutes giving us our agency so that we can act accordingly. And of course, out of this kind of activity, we develop talents in one field or another, which is what we're going to talk about tonight under the heading of foreordination. There are a couple of chairs up here on this side if you'd like to slip up. If need be, we'll part the curtains and get chairs behind. Yeah. Who's talking? We're on hold. Talk to whoever you're here. Please.
What if
this is
our talent? Then we were all born
at birth and we all the same. All right, now this is what we're going to do. I don't know the answer to what gives us our talents as to why we make different choices. So that's the ethereal blue where I don't plumb. But what we're going to talk about is the fact that we did get different talents. That we'll talk about at some length here. That comes ahead of us in just a minute.
Is it your belief that when we were intelligent, before we were spirits, that we were all running back to intelligence, but we were separate
again? Well, let me put that on the board. pretty fundamental. And this is the field where if you want to believe one thing, it's imperative, in my judgment, that you be intellectually honest enough to label what you believe pure speculation. And there are thousands of members of the church who, for reasons that I cannot understand, want to believe. Now, what we have in eternity is this. There is something that is called intelligence. There is something that is called spirit element. And those two things are identical. They're the same word or different, or the same, they're different words for the same thing. Now, in the account in Abraham, it says that the Lord showed unto Abraham the intelligence. That were organized. And it says that they were souls, they're the spirits. Now this spirit element becomes spirits. And what's involved is just simply this, by way of analogy. There is something that we will call spirit element in order to have a concept that we can crystallize in our mind. There comes a day when we are born the children of God. We did not always exist as the children of God. We were something else before we were born his offspring. Christ is the firstborn spirit son. So there was a day when Christ was born the offspring of God. Or in other words, there was a day when this spirit element became a spirit man. Or in other words, there was a day when this thing which is called intelligence was organized into intelligences. Intelligences are souls. They're spirits. The account of Abraham uses intelligences as a synonym for souls and for spirits, those two words. Now, that is all that the revelations teach. That is just what the revelations say, period. And they do not go beyond that. But there are some people who have written books and who have analyzed and who have theorized and who have speculated. And their speculations are that there was something over here that had agency, and that they chose to be born as spirits. But there are some people who have written books and who have analyzed and who have theorized and who have speculated. And their speculations are that there was something over here that had agency, and that they chose to be born as spirits. Now, all I want to get over is that that's not in the revelations, and if you want to believe it, please have it firmly entrenched in your mind that you're making something up that has not been revealed. Now, if you'll reason it out and it seems logical to you, go right ahead and believe it. I don't have to believe it. Some of these fellows at the BYU, I have 15 or 20 of the professors in the religious department in my classes this summer. Some of them obviously believed. They didn't argue with me, but I could tell that they weren't absorbing. But they should have been absorbing while I was teaching these graduate classes. So I just said to him, all right, my brother, if you want to believe it, that's wonderful. Just feel free. You've got your agency. But I hope that you know it's pure speculation. Well, that's all I'm saying to you. I tell you, you invented this speculation, as far as this dispensation is concerned, at least. B.H. Roberts invented it. He's the author of this speculation. And in order to do it, he had to invent a word that isn't in the English language. He invented the word intelligent thieves, which is the same as this, with an I in place of the E. He says there existed some things that are called intelligences over here, and they were born as intelligences. Now, it's so speculative that there aren't even any words in the English language to describe it until you invent some words. But really, what counts, as far as we're concerned, is that there was a day when we were born the spirit children of God, and when we became entities, and had laws given us and were permitted to obey or disobey. As far as we're concerned, that's when pre-existence started. Now that is not to be construed to mean that element doesn't always exist. Now this analogy is the same as in this life. Here we live in the world, and all around us is temporal element. The dust of the earth, however many elements there are. All right, this element exists. And the mother conceives and brings forth a child. And that child is made of the dust of the earth, in the literal sense of the word. But what that means is that child has a body that's composed of the various natural elements that make up mortality. So we would say that there are certain natural elements. I don't know how many of them there are. There were 9 of them all when I was in school, but maybe there are more than that now that they've discovered. Well, these natural elements get organized into bodies. And the bodies are the natural bodies that we have that house the eternal spirit. Now the element has always existed, but it didn't always exist as an organized body that would house a spirit. This element always existed, this spirit element, but it didn't always exist as an organized intelligence, and it didn't always exist as a spirit child of God. It had to be born to get in either one of these states. Now, I'm just suggesting that that's as far as we can go in the Revelation.
David, this was just to assume that there is some part of us that is always as ourselves, and we've always been an identity
and temporal. I think that's pure speculation. As far as I know, no one ever said that in this dispensation that B.H. Roberts said that. He wrote it in the 70s. The 70s on the Catholic Church.
Does that mean that our conscious identity began when we were born as spirit children of our Father in heaven?
Our conscious identity began exactly there, and we didn't have a conscious identity before that, as far as the Revelation says. Now, if we had a conscious identity before that, which I do not happen to believe, it is not revealed, and we're in the room, the realm of the ethereal world. So if you want to believe that, then just put a great big red flag on it, and in capital letters write, "This is pure, unadulterated speculation!" Exclamation point. The fact is that there's so much that we can believe and can understand that I don't think we need to get off in that realm. But some people love to get off in that realm, and they're welcome.
What do you think about the forces that kind of this in the seer signed by Brigham Young, the first president, his commission that published his magazine, he taught the doctrine of the pre-conscious identity?
I'm not even familiar enough with it to talk intelligently about it. Fortunately, I'm not. This enables me to keep down with my feet on the ground. So I don't have anything to say about that.
Last time we talked a little bit about this idea of coordination, we brought up the question concerned with DNC 76 about the various degrees of glory that we will attain. The question was brought up, I wonder what you thought about the idea. Will we all have an opportunity to enter the highest degree in the celestial kingdom? All of us who are now on the earth and who will be born on the earth. I'm thinking of the restrictions that are now placed on the colored people and others who, it would seem to me, I'm not clear in 76, whether or not they will actually have that opportunity to reach that glory.
Well, listen. We can do one of two things. I can make a brief statement about that, which will be out of context. Or, more wisely, we can hold that up until we're spending a whole night, an hour and a half, on the subject of who's going to exaltation. And if we'll do that, we'll be able to put the answer to your question in relationship to the whole subject, and we won't get a drop of understanding, which is out of perspective and will not be quite as fair to the whole of us. So let's hold that up until we get on our subject. Now, in wisdom, since we can so easily be off in the realm of speculation, and everybody likes to speculate about pre-existence, suppose we just let what has been said, unless there's some really important thing to discuss, suffice for this phase of our subject. And let's come down to something that is of practical application to us, and that we can follow with some considerable clarity and not have too much difficulty about. I think that it's quite important to understand the doctrine of the foreordination. And to do it, I guess, in wisdom, our starting point is Abraham 3. So let's open to that. I don't want to shut anything off that we ought to discuss, but really, there is so much to discuss about the gospel that we'll just go through this whole year without repetition. And when we get through, we won't have begun to cover the basic things. So let's just get all the perspectives that we can. Now start out with Abraham 3. And we'll look first at the 22nd verse. I think we will draw ourselves a diagram that will help to crystallize what we're talking about here. I'm going to use different words here than are in the scripture. But everybody here is going to know what we're talking about. I don't quite know the words that are perfect here. But to get the point through now, as we begin to analyze this. I'm going to write at the head of one column, outdoors. And at the head of the other column, indoors. And all I mean by that is that we're indoors now. And when this class is over, we're going to go outdoors. Or more particularly, what I mean is, we were outdoors an hour or so ago, and now we're indoors. And the way we got where we are now was to go through a door or go through a gate. Well, I'm doing this to try and get home to us the continuity of existence, the fact that we just go on everlastingly in the same course without radical and divergent changes. Now, obviously, I'm talking here about pre-existence. And I'm talking here about mortality. But I want to get it down to personal things so that we actually visualize that come from pre-existence to mortality, that for all practical purposes is no different from going from outdoors to indoors. We haven't changed an iota, almost. We have changed, look, we got in a house, a bar. We started wearing different kind of clothes when we got in. Well, we'll draw this picture now, and let's do it based on this illumination. Now the Lord had shown unto me, Abraham, the intelligent sense, what we just had on the board, that were organized before the world was. And among all these, there were many of the noble and great ones. Intelligent says, noble and great ones. And God saw these souls. Now notice how marvelously this scripture does it. We've got intelligences, and now we've got as a synonym souls, S-O-U-L-S. That they were good, and he stood in the midst of them, and he said, these I will make my rulers. For he stood among those that were spirits. Now here's a third synonym, intelligences, souls, and spirits. And he saw that they were good, and he said unto me, Abraham, thou art one of them. Thou wast chosen before thou wast born. Now that choosing is foreordination. Thou wast chosen before thou wast born. Thou wast ordained before thou wast born. Now, ordained doesn't mean that somebody conferred priesthood. It doesn't mean that somebody lay hands on someone's head. Now maybe in some instances with some callings this did happen. But somebody is foreordained. In a broader usage of the word than we're in the habit of using. They're foreordained to do a work that has no relationship to priesthood, some of them. They're foreordained to have a certain talent and capacity here because they developed it back then. Now what kind of talents and capacities did we have in pre-existence? Well, the way you know that is to look at all the people there are in the world and see what kind of talents and capacities they've got now. And that immediately lets you know what they had in pre-existence. All right, you've heard that before and you know it, and yet has it really got through? But here we are in the class now. What kind of talents and capacities have we got while we sit here in this class? Are there some musicians here? Are there some people here who know mathematics? Are there some people here with leadership ability? Are there some people here with spiritual talents? Well, either a half hour ago or 2 hours ago, we were all out there on the lawn, in the parking lot. What did you have when you were in the parking lot? Now, do you get the illustration? Every talent and capacity that you had when you were out in the parking lot, you've got while you're here in the room, and nothing has changed. Now this is the concept of pre-existence. If you knew how to play the piano out there in the parking lot 2 hours ago, you know how to play the piano while you're in here. If you understood mathematical formulas out there, you understand mathematical formulas in here. If you had the ability when you were out there to turn a wave band in your soul, and get in tune with the broadcast that the Holy Ghost is sending out into all eternity. Now you've come in the door, and you've still got the ability to turn a wave band and tune your soul up and get a revelation from the Holy Ghost. You just do not change. People think that there's a radical change. One of these days we'll be having our lessons on what's involved in passing from this life into the spirit world. And you'll discover that it's precisely and identically the same thing. You just go through a door. And you don't know a snap of the fingers more about anything that's important when you get in either paradise or hell than you knew when you were in this life. You go right along in the normal course of events. Well, in pre-existence, which is outdoors, we have laws and agents. And the result of these laws and agents was that some people back here developed spirituality. And this spirituality is the greatest talent that it's possible for anybody in time or in eternity to acquire. Yes.
Aren't there things that we learned in
the
pre-existence that we don't know now at this
point? There sure are. We'll bring that up. Thank you. That's true. Now, I thought about what I said about going to hell, too. Since it could be misinterpreted. If we die... It's more than the ability to recognize the truth. It's that plus the ability to be in tune with the infinite. Now, the people who in pre-existence developed the greatest talent for spirituality were these. Number one, Christ. He became like unto God in his talents and his capacities. Number two, Adam. He had dominion and power and glory and greatness and capacity next only to Christ. Now we do not go 3, 4, 5, and 6 from there. But from those two, Christ first and Adam second, then we go to groups of people. And the next group of people are the dispensation heads. The people who have come down here to head great dispensations of the gospel. Those include Enoch and Abraham and Moses and quite a host of people. There weren't just 7 dispensations. There were a lot of dispensations. There were 7 major through the biblical account. But there were Nephite dispensations and Jaredite and otherwise. And then the next group of people were the prophets and apostles, the people who developed the spiritual talent and capacity to be prophets and apostles. And then the next group, and this is a large group, that embraces prophets and apostles and dispensation heads in some instances, the next group in pre-existence was Israel, the house of Israel. And what this means that the whole house of Israel was foreordained. Here are people who gained talents for spirituality in varying degrees. Now, every dispensation head is not equal to every other one. And every prophet and every apostle is not equal to every other one. And everyone in the house of Israel is not equal. There's a variety of talents for spirituality within these groups. But what I'm saying is that this group of people in general, in pre-existence, developed the greatest talents it was possible to have, the talents in the spiritual field. Now, there were a lot of other talents, and this is so complicated, and it isn't spelled out in the Revelations, it's just in principle what we learn. This is so complicated that it is not possible for us to comprehend all the inferences. And so all in wisdom that we can do is to make a little simple illustration that gets the point of it. Here's somebody in pre-existence who develops a talent for music. Here's somebody in pre-existence who develops a talent for mathematics. Here's somebody who has a talent for leadership, a talent for in all their myriad varieties, and whatever they are, the foundation is laid back here. So that if someone plays a piano on the parking lot and they do a piano in here, it's the same. Well, there were some people who developed a talent. This isn't a created word, but it's created for our purposes here. Some people developed a talent which is non-spiritual. These people who developed that talent happen to be approximately one-third of the spirit hosts of God, the spirit children, the spirit hosts of heaven. Now this is Lucifer and his angels, one-third of the hosts of heaven. And they're going to be cast out, and they're going to come here through a different door than other people come. And they're going to be the devil and his angels. Now, this matter of talents is very complex. These people down here are unspiritual. That is, they're not inclined to conform to the principles of eternal righteousness that God proclaims, where spiritual things are concerned. But here's a fellow among them who loves the talent for oratory. He's a great orator. Here's another among them that develops the talent of personality. He's very persuasive. He can get people to follow him and to agree with him. Here's another among them that has the talent of intellectuality, the talent to understand things. Well, you see what happens? They have tremendous, powerful talents, but they're not connected with spirituality. Some of these people who were musicians and mathematicians and leaders and artists probably were down in this group. All kinds of an infinite variety of talents, but no spiritual inclinations, in consequence of which they were influenced by Lucifer. And Lucifer was a great orator, and Lucifer had a great personality. He's pretty smart. He got the concept in the Dark Ages that he had horns on his head and the cloven foot and all the rest of this stuff that has no resemblance to reality. The fact of the matter is, Lucifer is one of the most personable people that you'd ever meet. A lot of people have seen the devil in the course of this dispensation. They know what the devil's like. Well, the devil is a friend, congenial, persuasive personality, dynamic. He's got leadership ability, but he doesn't have spiritual talent. Well, all these talents are mixed up in an infinite variety so that it's so complex that we don't understand what's involved, or we can't comprehend fully what's involved. Now, someone goes from outside the parking lot into the room. Someone goes from pre-existence into mortality. And when they get over here, they're born with the talent of spirituality, if they have spirituality in pre-existence. Meaning that here is Christ and Adam and the dispensation head, and the prophets and apostles and the whole house of Israel. And somebody over here has talents for musical ability, for mathematical ability, for leadership, for art, or something else, and they bring with them those capacities. Now this is a new starting point here, and because it's a matter of taking a test while we're in mortality, the thing that happens is what was indicated. We forget the knowledge that we had back here, but we still got the inherent native talent to progress in the indicated field. And so here's poor old Beethoven, and he was a genius over here in music. And he got over here in mortality, and he forgot the thousands of intricate musical compositions that he created in pre-existence. He didn't remember a single one of the harmonies. He didn't know the compositions. He didn't know the choirs that he led. The knowledge was gone from him, but he had the innate, native talent that he developed back there. So he started all over again in mortality to develop musical compositions. And here is Adam. And Adam forgot all about the fact that he sat in the council of the gods, that he helped create the world, that he was the next best friend that Christ had, that he was intimate with the Son, that he knew the truths of eternity, and he came down here without any of that knowledge, but when he got here, he had every spiritual talent that he developed in pre-existence. And as a consequence, he didn't have the slightest bit of trouble of having an angel come to him. And he didn't have the slightest bit of trouble of being so inclined spiritually that when he held his conference in the Valley of Adam on Zion, he was sufficiently in tune to have the Lord come down and talk to him. There was no problem at all. And he had such spiritual talent that he stood up in that conference in the Valley of Adam on Zion, and he proceeded to prophesy everything that was going to happen in the whole history of the world, because he had a native spiritual talent and endowment and capacity to deal with that sort of thing. And he was just simply continuing immortality, the kind of life that he lived in a manner of speaking in pre-existence, without the remembrance and without knowledge. And now that's the way it operates with every kind of a talent. But what happens is that the Lord has a foreknowledge of what is to be on this earth. And he has a plan and a program. And everything is all arranged. And he knows that he's going to send so many spirits to inhabit the land of Canaan. He knows that he has allotted a certain number of spirits that are going to come down and be Nephites. He's allotted a certain number of spirits that are going to come down and be Lamanites. And the reason is that they earned the right to be Nephites. And they earned the right to be Lamanites. Well, he knows that it will take so many prophets and so many apostles to labor among the Nephites. He'll need so many missionaries to carry the message of salvation to the world in the day of David O. McKay, and so on, through all the intricacies that are involved. So, over here in pre-existence, something happens. In addition to our acquired talents that are involved. And what happens is that we have a conference and people are called up and they're told that your mission is going to be such and such. You're going to go down to earth in the dispensation of the fullness of time and be an elder of Israel. And when you get there, as an elder, you're going to be called to be a minister to the people and have the privilege of going out on a mission and teaching the gospel. And this is announced to us as our part in the plan. Sort of like a patriarchal blessing. In principle, it's something like that. We get a patriarchal blessing that tells us such and such and such and such that we're needed in the future. All right, in pre-existence, we just get told categorically that we'll be born with a certain inheritance. And the name of that thing is called foreordination. We are foreordained to do something. Now, I don't know whether all this foreordination is by the laying on of hands, or whether it's just a matter of announcement. I speculate that there may be some instances where it's the laying on of hands. But what happens is, we have this talent over here. We come here and exercise that talent when we get into mortality. Yes?
What's the problem? And all the complaints, we were told to mind on that, God
God knows even where every shadow is on the wicked sparrow. Well, if God knows all of us who believe that, then wouldn't he know the actions that we would agree? Wouldn't he agree that?
Well, now look. Let's just withdraw from that field. This is just totally beyond me, at least. And I've never heard anybody that explained to my satisfaction, intellectually, what's involved here. You immediately get saying, well, because God knows this and knows the end from the beginning, it must be predestination, in the sense that no agency is involved. But we know enough about the overall plan to know that it isn't a forced destiny, but that we do have our agency. Now, I don't know what we can say about that other than the fact is that we do have our agency, and let's just go on from there. If somebody can someday write an explanation for me that will help me, that'll be wonderful. But up to now, I can't. There's just no use philosophizing about it.
We must have exercised a certain kind of innate capacity in this outcome.
A certain kind of what?
Innate capacity. In other words, there were choices we made and in the pre-existence to develop the kinds of talents that we earned there.
There must have been an infinite variety of choices.
Does that same gift fall in the indoor world?
Well, we have an infinite variety of choices here, in a way. So we can start maybe not in, but we've got such a variety of choices here that there's no end to them. You've got plenty of subjects you can study, plenty of courses that you can pursue. You can go in one field or in another field. Everybody has a combination of a multitude of different talents. This life is just a pattern of the life that went before.
Do we have help in knowing what innate talents we develop in this spiritual existence while we're here on the earth?
We sure to help in knowing what we develop.
That's right.
Yeah, now that we do. That's what we're going to talk about now. We're not making much progress tonight. But I was going to start us out now on a series of scriptures that indicate the talents, how we'll know what talents we develop in pre-existence. That's exactly what we're going to do.
Is it possible that we are forwarding certain
things, but
the
Father perhaps might not know what temptation we set before us that we have a choice to make? Well, no, you can't say anything except that God knows the end from the beginning, and he knows the wickedness and the desolation and the temptations of all. And there isn't any question that some people who are foreordained to do something fail. They could have succeeded, but they didn't. And the reason they didn't is they chose carnal things instead of spiritual. But when we talk about this, we're mainly dealing in the field of spirituality, although in principle it applies to the whole realm.
Because of our choices in the pre-existence and our constantly limiting ourselves in this world, or else we understand it.
We sure have. Now, this is a good point. We sure have limited ourselves in this world, some of us, because of the choices that we made in pre-existence. Now, since we're talking about it, here are some people in pre-existence. We've talked about those who had spirituality. We've talked about those who were devoid of spirituality. There are some people who had little spirituality. And they, in the aggregate, totaled, I guess, billions. Slight spirituality, at least many, many millions. And they are born into this world. They may be the greatest musicians on earth. They may be the greatest mathematicians. They may have the most persuasive personalities. They might have leadership talents of all sorts and kinds. But they're lacking in spirituality, and as a consequence, they're Negroes. qualified there for the fullness of spiritual blessings over here. Now that purely and simply is what is involved in Negroes. There is no explanation for Negroes other than the doctrine of pre-existence. And as a matter of fact, this doctrine of pre-existence gives us a perspective that explains a whole host of things, of which this is one. Now, it's larger than Negroes, it's the races of man, the great variety of races. There are reasons why some people are Lamanites. There are reasons why they're Chinese or Korean. Now, it's too complicated for us to understand. There are people who come as Lamanites who are spiritually far superior to some Nephites. And one of them was called Samuel the Lamanite. There are some people who were born in other races that we don't think as much as we ought to think of, that are more spiritually inclined in some instances than we are. It's all intricate, it's all so complex that we can't comprehend it. But if we could comprehend it all, we'd have a perspective that shows us what's involved in the races of men. And we do get enough to know that those who were less valued, they're not neutral, but they were less bad in the cause of righteousness in pre-existence, are born into this world as the Negro people.
What about the wrong group of Negroes
who
really embrace the gospel?
That's wonderful. A few of them have. Someday they will embrace the gospel by the millions and millions. When the day comes that the gospel is for them.
What I'm trying to say is, would they have been in this group of those who
were
God?
Well, you see, it's just too complicated for us to follow. They were in the group that caused them to be born as Negroes. They had enough spirituality so that they accepted the gospel in spite of it over here. Now, there's one thing in this connection that we ought to have here. We're talking here about the degrees of spirituality. But, please, in this connection, remember our article of faith. We believe that through the atonement of Christ, all mankind may be saved, meaning in the celestial kingdom, by obedience to the laws and ordinances of the gospel. So every living soul that's born into this world, and that's everybody above this line, because these people down here, the devils, are not born. They're just cast out here. But everybody from top to bottom has a sufficient spiritual talent and capacity to believe and accept the gospel if they will. Nobody is born with such a small quotient that he can't be saved. But what we're saying is that some people are born with more time and as of spiritual things, and as a consequence find it easier to believe and obey the gospel and accept it than some other people.
We're told that in the that this mortality is a tool, that it's a sign of the gain in knowledge so that we can go on to the third stage, which previously was being the first stage. Now, are we going to understand that what we learn and the knowledge we gain in the second stage is not new to us? We already knew it in the first stage, but we had to have the physical tabernacle. Where is the line drawn between what we gain while we're here and what value is it in light of our previous?
Well, let me draw a little different picture. We're not going to get to our scriptures tonight, but we're going to have a foundation on which we can read those scriptures next time. And incidentally, we'll read some tremendously fascinating and I think surprising and amazing things when we make the list of what people are foreordained to. This doctrine of foreordination is about as little understood in the church as any doctrine. We read what Paul says about it, and we think that you just forget it. You won't try to understand it. is obviously different than what we suppose the fact was. But the fact of the matter is that all these things Paul said about being foreordained to have eternal life and to join the church and to be baptized and all the rest are just literally true. And we're going to discover that before we finish this subject. But let's get our perspective and our foundation here tonight. Now, in pre-existence, we develop talents and capacities. And these talents, well, let's write it down. For one thing, they're talents that we develop. And these talents are capacities. But in addition to these talents, or because of them, or associated with them, we gain a great deal of knowledge. Now, whether born into mortality, which is our second ascent, we've had one estate, our first estate, back here in pre-existence. Now we're on our second estate. When we're born into mortality, we come with the talents that we developed in pre-existence, but we are put a zero where the knowledge is concerned. We have none of the knowledge. Nobody remembers a thing about pre-existence. Now, when we get into some subsequent estate. Now, it won't necessarily be paradise of the spiritual. Although it will, this process will begin in that sphere as far as the righteous is concerned. But eventually, in a resurrected estate, in a day when we come up in the resurrection, we're going to come up with the talents that we develop. Now, what we do in this life, where talents is concerned, is add to them. We got them back here in pre-existence. Now, that's our Abraham account. We add to our talents. We go back to Abraham, we're at the 24th verse. There stood one among them that was like unto God. This is Christ. The talents he had made him like the Father. Because of those who were with him, we will go down, for there is space there, and we will take of these materials, and we will make an earth whereon these may dwell. And we will prove them herewith. So this is the testing part of all eternity. The proving part, the testing part, the probationary part. To see if they will do all things whatsoever the Lord their God shall command them. And they with each other to say shall be added upon. If they keep this estate, they will be added upon, meaning they'll have the opportunity to come to this estate. And they need their keep not their first estate, shall not have glory in the same kingdom of those who keep their first estate, as the devil and his angels cast out. And they who keep their second estate shall have glory added upon their heads forever and ever. Well, you add to your talents. You develop certain talents over here. You can add to those talents in this life. And if you add to those talents, so much the better over here. You're never deprived of the talent that you acquire. It's inherent in you. It's part of your being. It's a capacity that you've developed. If you've developed the capacity to do something, I don't know how you get rid of it unless you just willfully rebel so that it's withered out. Maybe you can do that. Now you started here and you continue here. And when you get here, what happens? Well,
here we are now, section 130. What is it the prophet said? Whatever principle of intelligence we attain unto in this life, it will rise with us in the resurrection. Therefore, if a man gets more knowledge and, what is it, intelligence here than another, he will have so much the advantage of the world to come. Now, if we gain some knowledge and some ability here, we're so much to the advantage in the eternal world. Let's see which verse it is. It's verse 19, 18 and 19. If a person gains more knowledge and intelligence in this life, through his diligence and obedience to another, he will have so much the advantage in the world to come. All right, if you develop a talent for spirituality here, and you add to it here, eventually it becomes perfected over here. Now, everybody that becomes exalted in this world, in the end, is going to acquire all talents and all capacities. Here, we're dealing with an infinite variety of talents and capacities. And the most important talent is spirituality. And the way it operates is that if we learn how to use the talent of spirituality in this life, it will be an opening door to acquiring all other kinds of talents. But if you specialize in some lesser or other talent, it won't open any doors. Now, the reason for that is this. Suppose in pre-existence you develop a talent for music. All right, you're born into this world and you have a talent for music. Okay, specialize in music while you're here, and don't do anything else. And where are you going to go? You're going to go to a celestial kingdom or a terrestrial kingdom, wherever you deserve. You're not going to go to a celestial kingdom because you specialize in the talent of music. But suppose you specialize in the talent of spirituality while you're in this life, and you don't know a doggone thing about music. Now, here I am, tone deaf. I don't know one note from another. All right, I suppose what that means is that I cut all the music classes in pre-existence. I just didn't develop any musical talent. I had a brother who was a genius, and who was writing concertos in his teens, having recitals in the assembly hall on Temple Square while he was still in his teens. All right? He was working at it, and I wasn't. Now, I just don't have any talent, and that's it. So, I got a problem. I'm going to go into the eternal worlds. When I get there, I'm not going to have any musical talent. But, I'll tell you how I'm going to get it. Assuming I do what I ought to. If I will work on the talent for spirituality, so that when I get into the eternal world, I have the talent for spirituality, this is going to be an opening door to me. It's going to be a great foundation on which to build. And I discover that because I have the talent for spirituality, if I do, when I get there, then by faith, I'm going to learn some music. I'm not going to have to take all the lessons that Beethoven took. I'm going to learn this by faith. Everybody that perfects the talent for spirituality in eternity eventually acquires all other talents because he becomes perfect in all things. Now, this singles out one talent as important. And what this amounts to is saying that religion is more important than anything else in the world. I think it's just literally true. What does it profit you if you come into this life and you work on the talent of mathematics? and you work yourself to death perfecting mathematics. Well, so what? You probably go to hell. You go to a team high school or a terrestrial teacher. You didn't work on the talent that would save you. But I don't know a thing about mathematics. I work on spirituality. And as a result, there comes a day when I learn mathematics by faith, by means that are provided. And that I end up getting all talents. So what, this is what life's about. It's to have the judgment and the sense to single out from among all the capacities and all the abilities and all the talents there are the thing that is the most important. And if you single out spirituality, you end up having glory added upon your head forever and ever. This opens the door to everything.
Is it possible to be without the talent of mortality that you
are not given in? Well, it's possible to increase every talent. Now, nobody's completely devoid of all talents. Even I can tell the difference between notes if they're an octave apart. Everybody can develop and increase somehow the talent that they've got. And so, you say you didn't have it in pre-existence. Well, you didn't to a degree, but on the other hand, you had to have some measure of it, and you could start from there.
That's why
pre-existence
players cast out the talent. Didn't we have to
look at it? All right, now, let me draw you one more picture. And let's get the concept of this. And this is an important picture to us. This raises the question of how long pre-existence lasted. All right. Now, I'm trying to get a little perspective here. And over here, I've got billions of years. But that just goes on forever. There's just absolutely no end to that. And this little space here, where we snap our fingers, is more than enough. This is Earth time. Well, now, how long is pre-existence? How long did it last? Nobody has the slightest idea of how long pre-existence lasted. I don't think that a mortal can, with the finite restrictions that are on our minds, can conceive how long pre-existence lasted. But let's take a look here. This gives us some sort of an idea. Here is a being in pre-existence who is called the firstborn of the Father. And this is Christ. Now Christ gets born as a spirit child of God. And he starts going to school. And he starts getting intelligence and knowledge and understanding. Until he becomes light unto God. And that's the phrase that we read in that Revelation. Now, if he is light unto God, it took him quite a long time to get that knowledge, presumptively. I don't know how long, but presumably it was quite an enterprise. But after he became light unto God, what happened? First, he became like the Father in intelligence, in knowledge and in understanding. And then what happened? Well, then he became the Creator. And what did he create? Well, he created this world. But he did more than that. He created worlds without number. One by if it were possible to number the particles of the earth. Yea, millions of earths like this, it would not be a beginning to the number of thy creation, and thy curtains are stretched out still. Now there are so many earths that Christ created, that if it numbered the grains of sand that compose this earth and millions of earths like it, you wouldn't start counting the number of earths that he created. Now, how long did it take him to create? I don't know how long it took him to create. This is beyond us. This is not revealed. But what I am intending by using this illustration to indicate is that this pre-existence was so long in duration that it's beyond our comprehension. Now, I'm a little hasty. Somebody will pick me up on this and tell me if this is the right figure. But what one of the brethren wrote, if I remember the thinking, life has been going on in this system for 2,555,000,000 years. Is that what that says?
Square of time right here
is so small that you can't even begin to measure it. But when you contrast it with 2,555,000,000 years, or when you contrast it with something that you can't conceive of, which is an endless duration, it becomes the most important part of all eternity. This life is more important than any part of all eternity because it's destined.
Why must some of us be examined and tested for 96 years and others for 96 minutes?
Well, nobody knows. Nobody knows. You see, it's too intricate for us. The prophet did say that some children who die in infancy are too pure to need the testings of this earth, and all they did was come here to get a body. Now, there'll be people born during the millennium, and they won't be subject to the testings that were involved. So you ask the question, why do we have to face up to what's here in this world, and there are going to be billions of people born during the millennium when Satan's bound? Well, what's the answer? Pre-existence. You and I lived in pre-existence, so we had to be tested in this life. But the kind of testing that we're being subjected to. And somebody that isn't subjected to these didn't need these kind of tests, and they're tested in some other way. I've had to mention, let me tell you what I heard the president say a few times. This makes sense. He said that it seems to me that the members of the church who were born and live under the circumstances that we live in, subject to all these tests, if they pass the test, they ought to have some special rewards in eternity. Well, that's an older development more than somebody else who lived in the city of Enoch. Now, people weren't tested in the city of Enoch like we're tested. You're not tested with alcohol if there's no alcohol. You're not tested with cigarettes if there's no cigarettes. You're not tested with immorality if there's no immorality available. Now you get in some environments, in some climates, in some circumstances, in a manner of speaking, you have some advantages. You live during the millennium, Lucifer's bound, and you don't have the test that our servicemen are getting when they're faced with some of the things in Vietnam. But on the other hand, seems pretty sensible to believe that if you get into the climate, the environment that we're in, and you pass the test, there ought to be some extra special addition of glory and dominion. And in that connection also, don't think that all the good people will be born during the millennium. The Lord sent his sprinkling of good people in the various dispensations so that there will be those around whom other people can rally to raise the standard of righteousness. Well, that's what we are. That's what we're supposed to be. Ye are the salt of the earth. The saints are supposed to be the salt of the earth. We're supposed to have the truth and stand firm to it, and be standards around which the people with less spiritual talent and endowment than we have can rise. Well, I didn't really intend to say any of these things tonight. I have a lesson to you. On foreordination, and we're still having it because this is really a fascinating thing, is to try and develop what some of these scriptures say about foreordination. And we'll do that next week, but we'll just assume that these general foundation principles we've been talking about will be a good foundation for us for next week. Well, the Lord bless you, and thank you, Jesus Christ.